Steve Bacon, Clark Region Wastewater.
Mike Odom, Olson Engineering.
Jeff Burson, Losbros.
Jake Housen, Redditness.
Don Hardy, Bridger Avon. And there's a few members that are going to be showing up at a moment, so we've got a few other folks that are going to be here.
We usually include
them. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Ben Bozala, Community Development.
Susan Ellinger, Community Development.
Dean Shacks, Department of Works.
Dean Benning, Environmental Services.
Carol Albert, Community Planning.
Thank you. And just wanted to remind everybody this meeting is being recorded for posting on the website. And if you have a cell phone, if you could please silence your phones. I wanted to review and adopt the meeting minutes from last month. If everybody had a chance to review the meeting minutes.
Do you have any edits?
No.
Do you have any?
I'm going to jump the gun. I'm going to say I have reviewed them and I moved to
You took my word.
I know. Second. You did it last time. Moved
and second and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Second item is reviewing upcoming events.
Upcoming events. Quickly on this, you'll find this on the next page over. Board of County Councilors work sessions and hearings that typically will, if they're to have work sessions, usually beginning every Wednesday at 9 a.m., although you'll want to check the county website on that if you're interested, because occasionally they're canceled and there's nothing scheduled. Typical BOCC hearings every Tuesday in the morning, 10 a.m., with the exception of first Tuesday of the month, that moves to 6 p.m. We do have a hearing on the residential care facility, Tuesday, March 8th, 10 a.m. We have a work session, fire and life safety inspection program for business occupancy, Wednesday, March 9th, 10:30. And our one and only, our BOCC work session, this is, of course, for our annual report and preview of the 2016-27 work plan. That's the end of the month there, last Wednesday of the month, March 30th, 10 a.m. I think everybody knows, but just to confirm, Don will take the lead, of course, as our president on that. And we would love to have all members that can attend on that. So if you please slot that into your schedules, it's very helpful to have all of the members in attendance with the board and Mark McCauley on that. Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, just the one note there, today actually, 5:30, a PC work session on the capital facilities plan.
And just on the note for the work session with the board for our work plan, Andrew and I did meet, and we're going to kind of do a combination. He's going to do the highlights from this last year, I'll take it forward for this coming year. And as we get into the agenda further, wanted to get some ideas from you guys on the work session on item number four about topics that we should be bringing forward. Two things: what does the Board of County Councilors want to have us consider, and then also what do we think are the top priorities? So we'll talk more about that in a moment. Any other thoughts on the items, upcoming events, or member announcements?
I do have one announcement. I think last month I talked about the stormwater case that we successfully won at Division 2. The Department of Ecology and Earth Justice has filed for a petition for cert. The Supreme Court, not a surprise, had a conference call with our public partners in County, Snohomish County, earlier this week. We'll be filing briefs in opposition to that, although it'll be pretty limited in scope. So we'll just have to see what the Supreme Court ends up doing with that case. If they end up taking it, my guess is it's it'll be a larger effort, at least the business community and maybe the larger public institutions to file amicus briefs on it. It's such an impact to both local government and the private development.
In a thumbnail, what would the outcome be if that was overturned?
Well, there again, it's kind of interesting. I think ecology's main position again is still kind of goes along the lines that these aren't development regulations, they're environmental regulations. I still don't understand how they get to that, but they're using the Lambda system to do that. And then now they're really kind of hammering on this concept that the Federal Clean Water Act will supremacy over state mandates, which again is a contradiction exactly with the Clean Water Act.
So maybe the Supreme Court final grant served.
Well, so there's been a lot of vesting cases in the last, I'd say, 4 years. The Supreme Court has denied cert on two of them, the Catala Village case and the case out of Ellenbard. Yeah, you know, Yakima that just came up and denied it on. And in a case called Woodway versus, you know, Amish County, the court basically said, we want the legislature to get in there and fix this issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of dubious as to whether or not the court is willing to take something like that. There is this, you know, I think alluded to, legislative effort going on to try to address it. So again, that's probably a better way to deal with it, but continue and we keep lawyer fridge.
Yep.
I apologize, I was in Korea.
No worries. So, we got your message, you're actually early. You're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, I got out of there earlier. I did have one other update. The subcommittee for driveways, spacing, corner lots, and site distance is progressing. We've had two meetings. We have two more scheduled, and we'll bring you an update after it's done. But I don't know, Jeff just been involved as well. I think we're making some pretty good progress. Yeah, we're working on some draft language, working on some code language from other jurisdictions, and trying to find something that's a little more workable.
So maybe next month?
Yeah, I would say maybe the month after. Okay. So, because the way we have our meetings set out, I don't know if we'll be ready by next month, but maybe we can put it on the agenda
May? Okay.
For May. Yep.
Great. When were they shooting to get that code change in, though? Are we trying to get it by the biennials? Yeah.
Because we have, I just brought these, we have them distributed already. Jan distributed them, and I don't know that we'd be able to make it by that either way.
I know, but I think that's what staff was thinking. I think staff was thinking of biennials, though, weren't they, or not? I don't know, maybe they weren't. I don't know. They probably haven't done it by year.
There
was a reason.
Yeah. When's the next set after this?
Marty has talked about Falls End. There's been some interest from two outside parties that we didn't include in this set, but that he sent an email to and said fall. So
we can talk across and do that. It may not be if biannuals are going to be housekeeping. I don't know. Is that?
Are we talking about these about today?
There's a lot of new standing walls.
Yeah,
rarely,
and
then it could go
fairly
quickly.
Yeah, I don't know that we need to. We need to get on the agenda and then talk about the next set. Because normally we contribute a few, and I don't know that we even had our agenda or work plan to do that before these came out. And so I know I have a list of things, and I think as some of these work groups, like the road mod stuff, and the road mod, the corner mod, and we had some little tweaks. But usually that's going to get everything before we come out. So,
who's staff on the corner left?
Allie is, yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll probably give Jan. I think Jan wanted some input for those. Scribner error thing. I'd like to give him a chance to talk about highlights of that just briefly. And so that's next. We'll talk about retaining walls and. Just note Andrew and Terry are here.
All right. Well, sorry for the late arrival of these biennials. I wasn't sure when they were going to be ready, and they did get the list whittled down pretty. This week. If you want to go over those. Otherwise, I was on the agenda for retaining walls, so I can just maybe go over that first and make sure that
Just whatever you wanted to share, John. It's kind of tremendous. Right. Leaving that up for you.
Okay. All right, so let's start. In your packet is the whole list of biannuals, and on page 24 is the retaining wall item, and it's number 25 of the list. So if we start out on page 24, basically, I think everything that's in here is stuff that's been discussed and massaged, I think. So I don't expect there'll be any surprises. So I think that we'll start on line 41 on page 24. And so we'll put some text added. When I say line 41, it's the numbering system on the left side of the page. So some text has been added to the provision that exempts walls and fences abutting a road right-of-way easements. So right now, there's basically no limit on the height of a wall that abuts a right-of-way or a road easement. And so we've added some language in here that we're now shifting to page 25, the very top line. So walls over 12 feet high will be reviewed for potential shading and visual impacts beyond the right-of-way. Community development director may impose conditions on the design to setback as the wall safety. So it's somewhat it's not nailed down as to what those would be, but it seems like right now we've got we can have atrocious walls right away, which was the whole impetus of this code section, the example of the light wall. So that is something that's been added and that's been discussed at earlier meetings that we were looking at doing. So if we go down to line 19 on page 25, this would say that we've changed the allowable height of fences to 7 feet in the setback. Line 26 allows height limits to be exceeded within building setbacks by using a series of step walls and landscaping in between. It's all been discussed. Line 6 on page 25, if the wall's at least 50 feet from the dwelling on the abutting property, then they can be built within setbacks. Line 10, another provision that was wanted was if you can obtain permission from the abutting landowner, so that's in there. Line 12, if a wall abuts non-residential zones or legal non-conforming or commercial industrial uses, you can exceed the height limits. So those are things that we've talked about before, and they are in the draft language. So line 14 on page 25 allows fences 7 feet, it allows open fences 7 feet tall on top of a 4 foot retaining wall within the setback, and then allows a 42 inch high solid fence on top of a 4 foot wall. So again, this is all been discussed in the past. And then on line 18, on page 25, it adds the departure provision, whereas the planning director can approve variations if there's some circumstances that we just haven't anticipated. So it wouldn't be a variance process. It's basically kind of gives us some wiggle room to be able to approve something that seems like it should be able to fit even if the code doesn't address it ideally. Yeah.
Is that typical in the health language to run due to circumstances not anticipated? Is that I'm wondering if that's, that's the resident attorney, whether that's when I first read that, my first thought was that it was setting a higher bar than just a typical bearing in the that you were. In other words, do most variants in language have that in there? I don't know what I've ever
variants read. Have criteria that you have to meet.
This doesn't really have criteria.
Right. You have
Your best case.
But I can see people arguing over what should have been anticipated and not anticipated, unless I guess before anyway, but I'm just trying to over.
I think you're overthinking it. I think it just creates the flexibility we need.
Yeah.
The question I have is we have the CD director doing the conditions above, and then it's the PD that's making the exception, so it should that be consistent?
Said community development director.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. One thing I just
noticed.
The answer is yes.
He's like,
how many angels can we dance on the head of a pin?
As I was reviewing this before I came up, one thing I did catch on page 25, line 1, where it says walls over 12 feet in height will be reviewed for potential shading and visual impacts. I think that should read walls and fence combinations over 12 feet in height. Because right now it's unclear if it just pertains to walls or
It'd be walls and or fence is.
So I will amend that before it goes out. So, and then the one thing I do want to touch on is back on page 24, line 15. So as it sits now, we struck the language that says the construction of retaining walls 4 feet or high, 4 feet or less in height. So right now we've eliminated that language that they can be within public easements. So I believe that was the intention. And that's how it reads. So right now, if we strike that language, it won't address retaining walls in public easements. It won't exactly prohibit it, it'll just be silent. So I think there was some concern that, retaining walls 4 feet or higher or less could just be built, period. And that could be a problem when the easement user needs to work in that area. So that language has been removed.
Yeah, that was the issue we were talking about with the, I don't remember whether it resolved it or not, with all with the PUEs running through, some of which are used and not used. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I mean, I agree, so there are some easements that are there, but they're not actually actively being used. They're there, they're needed. And if that's the case, we should be able to put a retaining wall in, say, a PUE, I think.
So we can't put, the construction of retaining walls, and maybe it's just somewhere else, but I thought we talked about this last time, not striking that first line. Construction of retaining walls 4 feet or less in height, and fences 7 feet in height may be constructed within. And then easements, not public easements, and easements in general.
Yeah,
I thought we had private in there. And then I thought we still were allowing, because basically the way it reads now.
We went back and forth.
You couldn't build retaining walls in those easements?
Oh, yeah, I do.
It's just not explicit.
Yeah,
whether you could.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not great at it.
No, you're right. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. So just keep that line there.
We should probably have subject to permission of the easement holder, right?
Well, listen, I don't know. Like on plats, the wall may be built where the easement's in place. I mean, it's already committed. In theory, it may have already.
True.
I don't know. It could have already happened.
And it seems unreasonable to go to all of the utility purveyors that may or may not have rights to that public utility.
I think the idea
is the wall we're talking about.
4 feet. So they only allow us up to 4 feet.
It's less than 4 feet tall.
Four feet tall. How wide? I mean, we're worried about the.
The widest width, 2.5 feet.
For the underlying utility, they're only about. Well, you have to stay off.
If it was ultra block, it could be 2.5 foot wide.
You sure you're still on the planning commission, Jeff?
Why would you want ultra block for a 4 foot wall? I mean, that's
very wide. How far would you have to set back from that wall with there for utility?
Most walls of that height are not going to have like tie backs or anything like that, so it's a pretty minimal clearance. Depends a little bit what type of wall it is, whether it's a keystone or.
I mean, a keystone wall in a PUV, you're not putting in a utility without taking out the wall, because the PUV is not wide enough to actually dig a trench without the wall falling in behind into the trench anyway. So.
Right, and if this has been part of code up to this point,
and if there hasn't been any issue
with it, then let's just leave it. Yeah. And not say anything about permission from the easement.
Well, right now, the language reads, the construction of retaining walls 4 feet or high and less, and fences 6 feet or high and less in height may be constructed within public easements. Exceptions may be granted when written approval has been obtained from the easement holder.
That's
exceptions, what was that intended to be? Exceptions to the height of those walls, or?
I think it would be
since it's about height.
Yeah, it would make sense. Yeah, so you can keep to these height one that's maybe granted.
Yeah, just that first sentence on the 15
keep that
should
sentence,
stay.
That's what my notes say.
And then I would say public. I don't know if I would put private in there. There's one of those things where it come up, well, it's a private easement. Does it say private easement there? So you can't put a wall. Where?
Just like public easement.
Just easements.
So is there consensus on that item?
I think what we discussed last time, according to my notes, is that we're going to keep that first line that Jan is currently showing struck. Adding the height limit, that's fine in there. And in order to, I mean, we could just say easements without any staying silent on any public or private. Does that sound good? I see heads nodding up in there.
Yes.
I actually think we voted on it last meeting.
I was looking for it, that was good.
Well, I apologize if I just sat wrong.
Yeah, no problem.
With that change, are we
not quite?
Okay.
Jan, your reference in 3A, starting line 26, but on line 33, fences are allowed on top of such walls consistent with section 43.2010F3, I think you mean I? It's your code site. It's your code site.
Yes.
You say H in here and it should be I.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Okay. And then back up, starting on line 12, public works director may apply the exceptions to height and setbacks for walls, fences. The fences is 43.2010F3A through I?
Through I. Yes.
As applicable.
Yep.
Wow. That's all
I don't know, we should re-vote on this, or
if you recall, I was looking at the notes that's in here, but
just to say that with those changes, have a motion second.
I would move to accept the change to section 43.2010F, amending fence height and setback requirements for retaining walls and fences, as written in our packet today, as amended, as we have discussed with the revision to code citation, as just discussed, leaving in line 15, which reads the construction of retaining walls 4 feet or less in height, and striking on line 17 the word public, and on line 1 on page 25, adding and or fences between walls and over.
Second.
All in favor?
Discussion.
A discussion?
No more discussion. Aye.
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 Aye. Jan, just wanted to give you an opportunity. We got a little time here if you wanted to talk about those changes. Yeah, and I think maybe if there's a, if you want to keep to the highlighted, you know, the big topics, sure. There's a lot of stuff in there that simply.
Sure, not, I doubt that it's relevant.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know if any of you have gone through the list and have any.
I've reviewed it. I had a couple of comments on one section. Otherwise, it's a Scrivener error issue. It's a change of reference from Clark County Department of Public Services to Community Development Department. Let's see. Updating from 5 to 7 year deadline for plat approval, preliminary plat approvals. Some consistency items with regards to fire setbacks, where fire regulations might require larger setbacks. No tips for freestanding coffee stands. That's pretty much it. The only comments that I had was, and does anybody else want to go through all these?
I just wanted to, in case there was something you wanted to point out, just to give you an opportunity.
And Greg, this might be for you. On page 20, where you're talking about the tapers, as shown on the standard plans, there are no standard plans for tapers, but you say per county standards.
Which one are you talking about?
Page 20, we're talking about road taper specifications.
Okay. Under rationale.
Standards. Isn't that the same as standard plans, or do you have something in code that talks about?
My understanding, I'll leave, brought this one out.
Yeah.
You know, it can be a number of different factors. And I don't know if you ask those standards, or, you know, not my gig,
right?
But that was the verbiage she suggested. So it's not a standard plan per se, but there are other what's the phrase?
Sources?
Regulations. Other regulations, guidance that.
So, and having said that then, on line 8 says, changing to per the county standards clarifies that there is no off-the-shelf standard plan, but that's exactly what per county standards says. That's how I did it. And okay, where is the standard that I need to go to in order to figure out the taper? And I know it has to do with speed, it has to do with how wide the taper is connecting to, it has to do with all the vertical curves and everything else.
Yeah.
What's a better way to phrase that? County requirements?
Size, well, because it would mean it'd be based on ASHTO standards because you're going to have a bunch of different factors that go into figuring out how long the taper has to be in. It's not going to be a standard, has to be this long, this wide.
It's based on the speed of when you're tapering. If you're tapering auxiliary lane, it's different than if you're tapering travel lane. Travel lane is usually like 180, so 25 mile an hour, you're getting 25. If it's an auxiliary lane, it can be 110 or 104.
But that's straight out of ASHTO.
Could we say accepted engineering standards, accepted engineering practices, yeah. Something along those lines? Eric, I'm out of because here, if I'm a code guy and I read this, I'm looking for the standard.
It's not in there.
It's a reference.
It's almost
standard.
More. It's almost a policy.
There, it is. Yeah. I mean, it is. There's guidance in ASHTO, but there's interpretations that have varied over time, and it's based on design speed, and then is it a travel lane or is it an auxiliary lane? Because we're talking about tapering. Basically parking for auxiliary lanes and not actually
tapering
the shoulder. So mm-hmm. The shoulder doesn't have the same, make the taper very quickly.
Could it be accepted engineering standards? Could it be as simple as that?
That would work for me.
It's fine on our, I mean, I don't have an issue with it. I don't know if Ali would be pleased with it or not.
Somewhere should there be a requirement if the county's making that decision?
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that it's...
Yeah, but I don't, I don't remember if it's a policy or if it's a, exactly what format that...
So if we, if it's agreeable to the county?
If we were to agree on it, if we were to decide on it on the county, we would cite a source. So that's why, you know, I feel comfortable with your recommendation, Mike. I mean, we would cite. I mean, if it would go back to some, you know, acceptable engineering standards. So we would point to some source. So whether we found that in, you know, Ashtoe or county code or
engineering practices as determined by the public works director.
That would work.
Okay. So accepted engineering practices as determined by the public works director.
That work for you guys?
Yeah. And to get there, we would have to go through the avenue of a specific source. I mean, sure. You know, to bring that to the public works director. So I think it works.
The flip side of that is I don't want every set of plans that comes in as tape run made by the public works director.
That's what.
Because or his designee. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
That.
When did these go to hearing?
First goes to the planning commission work session on April 7th.
Yeah, is this not on like this month?
And then close to here, probably from
certain same day as our 21st.
Same day as our 19th. So this is timely.
That's why I was trying to.
Mike, were there other?
Yeah, there was one other. The other one was on page 22, line 35. You struck fences got over 16 high.
Yeah.
And you put in reserves.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to renumber all the other sections.
Oh, okay.
Because basically the IRC exempts fences 7 feet or less from building permit. So this particular section are the county's exemptions from the IRC.
Okay.
So we're gonna accept the IRC's standard.
Okay.
So we'll take that.
These are exceptions to the IRC.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, I just didn't know why you put reserve and provide, which just replace that with 7 feet.
Well, it could, but then it's, you know, but then it's like this is an exemption to what the IRC already says.
Oh, okay. Understand. Yep.
It is kind of awkward.
No, that's okay. Understand. That was it. Thank you.
I'm not sure if we should take a vote on this or just those seem like pretty straightforward. And what do you guys think?
I have one. I'm curious on the process standpoint. It's 27, the change to the Shoreline Master Program. Again, getting on cycle. Just what happens in a scenario where we suspend plan amendments that we've been in for the last few years and we did it, maybe we see them on shorelines? Bearing that in mind, I don't know whether that would require. Finding the limitation.
It doesn't say that it's connected to the common. It says limited to once a year.
Okay.
So they can suspend site specific requests, policies, but they could take up limited amendments.
Okay. I'm good.
I think that was good. I think we're just giving Jan those items for.
Planning Commission typically likes to have our recommendation one way or the other.
Is Planning Commission going to see this version, or they see the version that already has our comments in it?
They will see the updated version with the comments.
With our comments incorporated in it. Right, so yes. Then they won't necessarily need our comments. They can simply review it, and you're okay with everything. Those our comments are already incorporated.
So in that case,
is that already just the same April version?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And then we'll review them again, and if we have an addition, then we'll
submit. Yeah, that's true, right.
Except the wall and fence.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going back.
We're
going
to bring it up in October.
We're done.
Yeah.
We're
not going back. Yeah. So you could probably just all
put that. You want one.
Put that on the work plan for later this week.
Explain why you're going without case.
I may work some more on some of the rationale, some cleanups and stuff like that, so it might not be exactly as you see it here, but the text, as we've discussed, will be changed.
We probably just discussed the discussion that we had here today with the planning commission. Thanks about that.
I think that's great. Jan, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next comp plan update, Oliver.
All right.
Come on up. Supportive that.
We're being recorded.
That's okay. Good job, Aaron.
Yeah, all right. I have to say, I was thoroughly impressed with your patience.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That was my issue.
Well, your issue is you did a great job. Yes, thank you. Your issue will come back again in a different form. We'll come back. Thank you for inviting me again. Appreciate that. What I handed out, rather than going through a PowerPoint presentation, is actually the table that shows the recommendation of the five council members in terms of their preferred authority that we are advancing forward for the final environmental review. Before, I don't want to go through this one by one, but if you would like me to do so, I will. I will only add that the preferred alternative map is now on our map online. So if you access that, you'll be able to view that. I will also add that the board will hold a work session March 16th on, hopefully they will be extending the cluster provision to the resource areas at Forest Ford. So you're welcome to attend that work session. Again, it's March 16th. Right now, as you know, clustering is limited to rural 5, 10, and 20. We are proposing that add 20 go to 10, and Forest 40 go to 20. What we would like to implement that policy is by clustering. And so there will be a work session with the council on March 16th to review what that will look like and maybe answer questions and see what direction they want us to go. So just want to put that out. What is not, the only thing that is not included here is, as Jeff indicated, is their request to add a site. That's in the Vancouver UGL.
Yeah,
that was not included. The board also recommended that the 40 acres or so, this will be on page, I believe on page 4, 3E. Washugo has requested about 41 acres currently designated as rural 5 to be added to their urban growth boundary. The council said no. I think there was a concerted effort by the neighborhood or property owners out there that came unglued. The site in question was approved by the county through a cluster application. So, the board listened to the testimony of the property owners and decided to not include that property, 41 acres in the Washugo UGA. And the mayor of Washugo and I believe staff did send email to the council withdrawing their previous position, if you will. So that also helped the council in not including that site. But you can also see that in both Richfield, the 111 acres, known as New Ground property, as well as 56 acres in the center, we approved with a condition that it does appeal. Those two cities will be the one defending that action. both, because both properties are currently designated as agriculture. So Jamie is aware of that. Jamie is, I believe, you're representing the property owners of Whitfield. And I don't know whether Steve Hollenstein is representing all the property owners in the center or just Field, but he's also aware of that. Of course, this request, they did submit a report on the designation of agriculture. I looked at that report. I cannot tell you that I have been in one board or the other, but I know the report was done very well now, looking at the site specifically, not what we did in 2007. So I hope it passes muster. That's all I can say. But those two properties were included in the UGB. The other request is just very minor technical changes. The only thing you have to pay attention is to 2B on page 1, 2C, and 2D. Mm-hmm. What 2A or 2B refers to is what I discussed earlier about our proposal to reduce the minimum parcel size from Ag 20 to 10, and then Forest 40 to 20, and then in those areas where we have Rural 10 or Rural 20, according to resource, we're also proposing that that goes back to go down to either Rural 10, that go back to Rural 10 rather than Rural 20, if that's for this effective resource. Should this change also withstand scrutiny from the Rural Board if it's not appealed? But we will be recommending that for this to go through, that we'll come back and develop a cluster provision that is then clustering the resource. So basically, that's what we have. We have now submitted the map to our consultant, ESA, not Bob Tubb. ESA is the one who will be completing the report. We will be sending a letter to Bob Tubb to put his pen down, if I can say so. What are the next steps? What I attach.
One quick question, sorry. Yes. We're moving on to the next one.
Yep.
On 2D, the rural lands, it says R20 from R20 to R10, and then it says in some areas.
Yes.
Is there any specification on what some areas are?
Yes, what that means is that where, because the rural 10 and rural 20 were used as a way to buffer resource, if we are now going for, say, forest 40 to 20, and we have, or add 10, add 20 to 10, where rural 20 is according to that.
That's what you were saying before, yes. We're linked to these other two. Okay, yes. I wasn't quite sure how that works. So it's where those rural lands are agriculture.
Yes.
Okay. Only.
Yeah, only where they have bought resource that we are reducing the pasture size. There's no need to keep rural 20.
Okay.
We're going to 10.
That's easily to get mixed up, I think, just in this thing in some areas. Maybe, I don't know, if this is already out to review.
I wasn't following you.
I think a lot of people
think
that they could split up their R20s to 10s now. They don't abut those other ones, and they have no idea that what some areas are. I saw the some areas, I'm like, let me ask.
Yes. We've already mapped that out, so that will be, we can show that at any time, one on the letter time, so you see visually on the map what area this will be applicable to.
Okay. And I think what Eric's saying is not just so much for us as it is just anyone else that looks at this.
Sure.
What the problems that creates for you, for staff.
That's true. Right. We knew going in that we have to be able to identify what area this will be applicable to. Yes.
Kind of related, but I've gotten calls from several property owners looking to buy this property. Mm-hmm. And on the listings from the realtors, it says that it's able to be subdivided.
Oh.
And that is not the case. And they're basing it on like this kind of language right here. One, it hasn't even passed. But there's going to be some innocent purchasers who are going off of this listing. And every time, so you got to talk to listing, and that is not true.
Well, are they thinking then maybe of a cluster division?
Well, even then, this doesn't. If you have an R20, you can't go down to 10 even with clusters because it's a 20-acre lot.
Yeah.
You can't even cluster that.
That's true.
You don't have another lot there. But based on this language, people are saying you can subdivide it to 10s. may or may not. I didn't understand it, so I've never looked if it was a budget resource, but I'm guessing it's not. Some of them are.
My assumption would be is that, unfortunately, it was either probably a realtor that was uninformed, or it was a seller who was telling their realtor that alternative four was going through,
right,
and then they were basing their marketing off of alternative four thought process. So, and that unfortunately happens more than one would hope.
I agree with you, because we are also a staff receiving calls from property owners saying, well, here's what is being represented. Is that the case? I'm not telling them that alternative four is just a proposal.
Yeah.
And nothing has been approved. So people are backing off those that advise that alternative four. Because again, if you recall, we have two types of alternative four. We have the one that was studied, we have one that was revised, and it was just confusion out there, if you will. So
yeah,
people were confused. Those that saw alternative four that was studied and saw the one that was revised, what was proposed was completely different. People were also raising issues. I saw this at this open house. Now you're telling me my problem is now going from S to Z. So there was a lot of confusion out there, but you know, that was not the creation of that, as you know.
Right.
That was out there. What I can touch upon is what is next, what are the next steps. We can see on our staff report to the board, this will be on page 2, the last 2 pages of our staff report. So what we are doing now is we are in our final supplemental environmental impact statement. ESA is working on that now. We are going to be running the urban vacant buildable lands analysis based on the preferred, so that we can be able to assure that there is adequate available land in the urban area, if you will, to accommodate the 20-year growth plan that we are planning for. We are beginning our capital facilities plan revisions to that, and then as well as the capital facilities financial plan. The capital facilities financial plan is our 6-year financing plan that shows how we are going to fund the first 6 years of the plan. And then we are beginning work on our comprehensive plan text. I had originally wanted to revamp our comp plan text, very similar to what was done with the retaining our code. But with the delay and what is going on, I'm going to abandon that and just do the minimum that I can, because I don't have enough time to do so. There may be some minor changes to Title 40. We will be bringing that to you, let you see that before we go to the Planning Commission. Some of that will include our proposed cross-site provision in the resource. So you see that. As I said, we are beginning, I don't know what time the final supplemental environmental statement is going to be issued. I'm giving ESA about a month or two, because what the council approved is within what I've already studied. I don't see this taking them some time to do. By sometime in April, we'll be preparing to issue or send all our documents to Commerce to begin our 60-day review. That needs to go to Commerce by April 30th. We are going to meet our June 30th deadline. As I said, we are going to begin Planning Commission work sessions to begin to review the comp plan text, any proposed changes, and that will go to them in a strikeout and underline, so you know what is being proposed to change. And we will be also posting that on our web page, as well as the Planning Commission grid, so that you may be able to take a look at that. And we are going to be proposing a joint work session between the council and the PC, again, to facilitate us to meet the deadline. That's joint work session and hearings between the council and the PC. The PC, of course, will go separately, deliberate and make recommendation to the council, and then the council will start their hearing and make their final decision. All this will happen, the PC and the board hearing will happen sometime May and June. So we have a daily schedule ahead of us. So I'll stop there and take questions that you may have.
So what happens if the VBLM run comes up with a shortage?
We will bring that to the attention of the councilors. We will. But as you know, this happens every time you do the comp plan. If it takes you 3 years, if it takes you 4 years to complete that, the growth that I've occurred is part of that, so you have to adjust for that. That's what I did in 94 and so forth, which accused me of cooking up the numbers, but the growth is what I did with me. So you have to account for the growth that occurred within the time period if you took it. So our base year have always been 2015. So by the time we adopt, had we gone back to say 2013 when we started this new base year, would have been 2013. By the time you get to 2016, you would have accounted for the 3 year growth that have occurred and adjusted for that and then see, do you have enough land to accommodate it? That's how we were doing, and that's how we've proven and supported. But if we come back and show that we don't have sufficient land to accommodate the growth, we will let the council know that, see what adjustment. Particularly in the UGB, for those cities, Camas and Vancouver, that didn't want to expand their boundaries. And as you know, majority of these cities are the ones that said we don't want to expand our boundary. We think we have sufficient land to accommodate the growth we're planning for, or our their own share of the growth, recognizing that, as you know, the medium growth, the medium OFM number is much lower than it's been in the past. I have no way of disputing their numbers.
The city of Vancouver has been no growth for three or two, at least two cycles, I think.
Right.
Yeah, as you know, so that is all driven by population. It's even because if you recall in 2007 or 2004-07, the board picked a population growth rate of 2.2 in the first 6 years and then 2% thereafter. That's huge.
Yeah,
that's huge.
It's frustrating. Having sit on their affordable housing task force for a year, listening to them gripe about lack of supply, yet continue to maintain there's an inherent contradiction there.
Just a quick question. This is kind of a breath of fresh air for you guys now to start looking at policies and text. There's some major, what are the major elements that you're seeing on policy level that Planning Commission and board members should be seeing? Do you have some thoughts on that?
I know there is some conversation about what to do in terms of affordable housing, homelessness, if you will, and what other type of products should be out there that we should be considering. That I'm sure will come up as we begin to go through the land use and the housing chapters. There is also an emphasis on economic development, so I'm not sure if any new policies will be proposed. So those are the three areas that I see potential new policies. I know that there have been conferences on the Vancouver side on affordable housing and homelessness. So it's likely that our own council will pick that up, whether there will be a similar summit and conversation, additional conversation, I don't know. But those are areas. There may be some policies on transportation, but that, you know, as you know, when it comes to CLC and other things, planning staff are not involved in that. But there may be some policies coming around transportation. I don't know what customer don't want to be critical. I don't know what he's going to propose. But those are areas where I can see the council proposing some new policies. There may also be some what I may call side by issues, that they may want us to look at after the adoption of the plan. This may be issues relating to what to do in the rural area. So there may be additional policies or directive of the staff to focus on some issues. I'm sure they may be, you know, putting at least together what to do going forward. The idea of extending accessory dwelling units to the rural area would probably come up. I don't know, as you are aware, it's not likely that every house or every lot out there would propose an ADU, but that opportunity will be out there. We are looking at that issue carefully because, and I use the term carefully because Pierce County proposed that, they'll be taken to the growth board. I'm watching to see the outcome of that, what the growth board will do. Because I know that what Pierce County proposed, they extended ADU, accessory dwelling unit, to the resource area and to the rural area. Their fault is that they did not include that as part of calculating or including that in terms of additional home site in the rural area. I don't know why they did that. I wouldn't do that, but that appeared to be the issue why it's appealed to the growth board. But I'm following that to see what happens. We might use the outcome of that to advise the council how to proceed.
We did, however, increase the number of people per household in this compliance.
2.66, yes.
Yes, so we increased the number of people per household to follow a national trend that more people are staying at home, more elderly are staying with family, and to incorporate that same thing, they're giving them their own space with an ADU typically. But,
right.
But it's a little different because you can rent the ADU out, which is different than having it for family.
Right. And you know, Marty will jump in here. We currently know this. He used to be my boss. I know. It's true. Remember that now in the rural area we allow for hardship.
Yeah.
Sure. We allow for guest house. If you throw in ADU, you know, issues around, is it going to be on the same septic system and the same well? There's so many issues we have to be concerned in developing. You know, allowing for extending ADU to the rural area. So it is a conversation that we need to have. I won't say one word or the other, but I know that that's going to be one of the issues. Again, not everybody will take advantage of that, but that provision is extended will be the issues of whether you build another ADU or the same well or the same septic system. I don't know how many units will be on one well, one septic system, I don't know. But that's the issues that have to be addressed going forward. I don't know if that answers your
question. Absolutely. And just one final question. The preferred map, that has been officially adopted by the Board of County Council?
It's been approved officially by the council, right? They did throw away the all four as well as the revised all four.
One question,
Howard.
This is the interplay, and this is something I haven't. I probably should have talked to Steve more, Steve, a little bit more carefully about. But what's the interplay between rural, industrial, land bank, and land? I know they're kind of running on similar cycles. And the only reason why I ask is if that gets approved, you know, I think that approved, which I think is a good thing. Is going to have a capital facilities impact on the comp. So what's the assumption?
The assumption there is, remember that the section that we are using is provided in the GMF. Had the county, this is where there is always a conflict in terms of timing. And had the county adopted our comp plan and we are done, and we had an application to do an industrial land bank, we would be processing that application. The way that the industrial land bank is written, you can do that out of cycle. The difficulty is when we receive the application, it requires a lot, the criteria is very strict. It requires you to do a programmatic environmental review. It requires you to do an inventory within your UGB to determine if you have sufficient land. There's so many criteria you have to ask for you also to develop development regulation on how to mitigate potential impact. So, and coordination with other cities. That provides a better framework to do within a comp plan because you're already doing that. But we are using 367 because we don't have a user. This is more of a speculation. And the analysis and the CFP work is going to be totally different. I say so because it's a property that is outside the urban growth boundary. All we can do is coordinate with our impacted cities, in this case Vancouver and Battleground. They're not going to tell us anything about the CFP because it's outside their UGB. The only people that will tell us anything whether they can be able to serve will probably be Black Region of Wastewater. And then the developers is going to come up with.
We like to be helpful.
Yes. But, you know, the developer, you know, if someone comes to town, you know, McCann Spesino already did the master planning of that property. And Kerosene did the transportation analysis of that. So that is all done. It will be on the back of the developer to build the road and build the infrastructure. So that's how that is moving forward. Does that answer your question? Let me know where I'm off. I'm not included in the CFP for the comp plan. I'm dealing with this separately. The only thing I will say that it is in the future, we will have to account for that job.
Okay, maybe that's the question. So in the future, we're going to have to harmonize?
Yes.
Harmonize.
When it comes to total number of jobs countywide. Yes.
Okay.
Oliver, thank you very much.
Thank you, Oliver.
Okay, next work session with the Board of County Councilors coming up on the 30th. And just kind of the work plan and want to talk about good lead in here, I think, in terms of the topics that Oliver was talking about, and there may be others as well that the board is interested in. So wanted to talk about them further about items. We have our list, and a big part of it is what are the top, maybe that's the focal point, is there's a lot on this list. The top items that we really want to champion as priorities for 2016. So let's leave it open for that for discussion.
Yeah, at the end of the last meeting, I brought up the fact that I think that the board's going to want to see, and I think for our own benefit going forward, we're going to need to identify a short list, at least, of items that we will actively take up. One of my top ones is certainly going to be the CEPA thresholds and exemptions. That's already screwed up a project, at least one, if not two projects of mine. Based on the information that's provided here by environmental and development staff and what we all assume to be the way it's going to be, and that has since been contradicted by community development staff and prosecuting attorney's office. And we need to get on board with what it is actually, what it does mean. I know that there's some contradictions that community development staff has with regards to safe exemptions versus what some of our board members remember discussions at as the new CEPA thresholds and exemptions were being discussed in Olympia. And I think that's one of the top ones that needs to be resolved. We know where the differences are. I think everybody's fully aware of that. If not, let me know. But it was our understanding that when Kevin Tyler gave his presentation here, that he made it abundantly clear, and I think the question was asked several times, and I've reviewed my notes from those meetings as well as his PowerPoint presentations, that if the only threshold in a project, otherwise SEPA exempt, is for grading, and it exceeds 1,000 cubic yards of grading, that it is not subject to SEPA. Staff and PA's office have do not agree with that.
That's right.
And I'm trying to find, and I'm sure we would all like to know, why that's the case, why we were told one thing, why...
We got directions from the state on that.
Yeah. Eric and I worked on it.
So can you have some interpretation from the state? It's...
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to see it.
Were you here during Kevin's presentations?
No, but I was part of a group of counties working on SEPA reform. I was actually with Representative Fitzgibbon and his group for a while. I remember the conversation.
And out of that,
I don't know if we got down to the, I don't know if we got into the nitty gritty of these exemptions and grading. I do remember things like, why would you not exempt a subdivision of X number of lots if you're allowing X number of units in the same lot count in the subdivision? There was some, this was like
that was
two or three years ago.
So it was supposed to be for subdivisions.
So
I think what we're
and mind you, ecology, you know, they're not real champions of change.
I might disagree with that.
Well, you have to work on change.
Yeah,
so I could look at the
you know, I would like to see,
but if you have something from ecology, you know, that would help.
You know,
I'm gonna have to go back
if you could, because otherwise what they say is going to be the law of the land unless we can somehow come to some kind of consensus.
Again, the intent I think of the SEPA reform was to kick up the number of units that you were allowed to do, so you didn't have to go through the SEPA process. And that was the intent of the Green Deal. It wasn't to keep that strict. Those standards that, SEPA continually comes up. We had hearings again on it with the legislature in October about additional reforms because, you know, we have an affordability crisis in the state of Washington. One of the things we keep saying is what is making us look at the processes. SEPA's, there's ones that opponents often keep taking up projects that, if you're complying with the code and you're doing a straight over capital development,
I think it'd be helpful to have some case scenarios. You know, you have one, obviously, Mike.
Yep.
It's a complicated thing. I mean, there's, to be honest, it's very rare that we don't do SEPA in a project,
mm-hmm.
because they're usually of size that it triggers it. But there are some nuances to this issue. And
when was that bill passed, a session or two ago?
Yeah, it would have been 13.
There was a gal that came down from Ecology Murray and did that training like 2 or 3 years ago. That was very helpful, but it's a complicated subject matter. I think part of this is it's getting into the ecology seems to be going away from fragmenting things into a bunch of pieces, which was historically how they looked at things. And now they're looking at more of the use category. What is it for the exemption? Not the pieces of it, not all the individual elements, but if it's an industrial activity, you know, what is the threshold? And that's kind of where I think they were going with it. Broad brush is not looking at fragmenting it based on, you know, 10 different things that previous threshold things, but what is the use category? That's my read on that.
Well, and during the last set of hearings, from a policy standpoint, it wasn't, I don't think ecology, you know, the development community, the environmental community necessarily, everybody was trying to see the reform. The agency that had the biggest issue of it was actually WBOT, which is the impacts to state facilities. They used SEPA more heavily, I think, in Puget Sound to extract mitigation from development projects up there. They're the ones that have the bigger problem. So again, I think our notes will reflect that it was intended on lessening how many CBOs you had to do the project green in a certain way.
And I guess I would have to ask the board if they even want to take this up, because community development staff and PA's office have already chimed in. And if we're going to waste our time on this when the answer is going to be the same, I don't want to waste our time.
Yeah, there you go. Find that missing link and deal with notes.
And it's more a matter of, you know, kind of emotional that we're told one thing here in this body, and we go through and work with Jan on the exact language to be included in code so that this is clear based on what Kevin has told us. And then when in practice we go to actually go through the process, and all of a sudden staff's like, whoa, no, time out, that's not right. It's like, well, yes, it is, no, it's not, yes, it is, no, it's not. In fact, PA's office says it's not right, and therefore you're done. No. So is it even worth going through it or not?
Yeah, should the PA's office have heard that process before they made the decision? I mean, should they have had to come here and basically explain why that's not the case? Because I don't think they have the same evidence.
Right.
That we had, and that we all had.
So this is in 2012, and I'm reading the WAC. It talks about any fill or excavation of 100 cubic yards for the life, for the lifetime of the fill or excavation of any of the excavation fill or grading necessary to the exempt projects in of this subsection shall be exempt. Then you get to the new threshold, single family of 30 units, multifamily 60, 40,000 square foot on ag buildings, 30,000 square foot on commercial, up to 90 parking spaces, fill and excavation, 1,000 cubic yards. So where do you get that any project, and you have over 1,000 cubic yards, but you meet these other exemptions, that it's exempt? I don't read it that way.
I'll get the information. Do we want to discuss this? Do we want to take this up?
Well, let's before we take it up, let's find the information.
Okay.
Because I know that it was part of the discussion, it was part of the intent.
Yeah.
I mean, there's code language that's been in there.
Right.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
I think there needs to be, the whole ecology has some guidance on this as well. I mean, I've got to believe it's out there. This, they kind of throw it out there without definition. It's difficult. We're trying to figure out what it means, but there's got to be something written down on this.
Yeah.
You know, what was the intent? Why did they do the reform?
Okay. Can you dig out what you have?
I have a note to myself.
Okay. Can you dig out what you have?
Yeah.
Also, I'll put together what I have.
I mean, it seems kind of, it would be an extreme example to say that you're building some, you know, commercial parking or a commercial building and it's 20,000 square feet and you're going to have underground parking and you're going to have to excavate a lot of material, that somebody wouldn't say, you know, you might be hitting some groundwater, you might be hitting some, so I can see where the 1,000 cubic yards, regardless of the other exemptions, would be a trigger. I mean, I can see that being the case.
Mm-hmm.
We don't build a lot of underground parking, but it does happen elsewhere in the state.
Right.
So if there are other, you know, CEPA's gigantic, so if there are other provisions that I'm missing, I'm looking at the new flexible thresholds and the exemptions. And if there's something out of ecology or association of cities, counties, I'm all ears.
Okay.
I can be convinced.
So but those are
with the documentation.
So the answer is yes, we will be. That's item number one. Do you have others for the consideration for the board? Mike, did you have any?
Oh yeah, just the three that I mentioned, and I just kind of pulled these things off the, you know, what I know that Eric's been talking about, you know, the engineering stormwater reuse for the single family residences. That's always been a big one. And I don't know if there's anything we can do. I don't know if there's anything you can do. I mean, you're kind of, are you not mandated to do what you have to do?
I think we need to look at as a board and our work plan how to simplify it. The county, when they went through it, they want to simplify it. I hear all the time, but people come to our office wanting a stormwater report for a single family, and they are just, you know, up in arms. Why do I need to do this huge study to put in splash lines? and that's what we end up doing. We end up putting in splash blocks in a lot of these cases.
So it's dispersion most of the time.
And we run these models. I mean, it takes a long time to do it. Like to say, you know, we try to simplify it in our end. We've actually got it down to, I think, the simplest process we can, but then every time we do it, there's a new requirement added on, and then we have to do a plan set now. To do splash blocks, we have an 11 by 17 plan set with details and free reviews.
Five pages.
Yeah, I mean, just to put that together, we're at a certain threshold where it's like $1,200 to put the plan set together plus whatever extra design you need. I mean, it's a good. Yeah, there's going to have to be like $2,000 to put a splash block in.
Did you say you had to do a SWIP too?
Yes. So, if there's a simpler way to do it, I don't know if there is, but I think on our work plan to try to find something for the homeowners or building should be part of our work plan. Maybe we'll do it and we'll say, but
we tried it.
But at least we tried.
We tried.
Okay.
I mean, it's a big issue.
Yeah.
And then the other one that you brought up before, Eric, are the grading permit, simplifying the grading permit process. We know what that means. I mean, to get a grading permit on our whole project to start early is you have to have your set complete and first review done. Then they'll cut you loose right from it, and they've only got maybe 2 or 3 weeks left to review, and you're ready to go for everything else.
Just in conjunction with like civil reviews, trying to break out the grading permit early.
Yeah, I think
right. Early grading permits.
Early grading permits without having to go through. I mean,
I know that there are reviews. Sometimes it's not even worth it.
Yeah.
Because the process to get a grading permit takes almost as long as the process to do the engineering, and
it's a separate plan set. And if you want to use the same plan set, you're almost through your final civil review anyway. I don't know if there's a simplified method. I think that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. One other big thing I think we need to start looking at as a board, and I think it's going to hit workload especially, is we have this big group of projects, and I talked about it already on it, but we have all these projects that are expiring because at the end of 2016, those extensions all expired. Now, of course, everyone's waiting until the last minute.
Yep.
I can tell you the workload we have is significant, and that you guys will not be able to hire quick enough to take care of them and train people quick enough. And the contractors don't have enough, you know, backups available in Clark County to do all those projects. So is there a way to extend those if they're showing progress and if they give up certain vesting that they probably already gave up? So because the city of Vancouver did it. I just got a letter.
What are they doing?
Extended the year.
One interpretation that Marty already made weeks ago was that, this helps a little bit, but this 12-year period that you've got from June 2004 forward counts as like the 7-year period, and then you can get 2-year extensions for phase approvals, so that helps. So December 1st, we may get several phased approval or requests, but that at least helps with that. But I don't disagree with
you. Yeah, even if it's one phase done, a lot of these projects aren't phased. So we'll end up having to be close as we
can. Eric, aren't you kicking the can down the road?
Just one more year.
Just
one more year.
And you know what? It's not necessarily hard. For our business, it's better if they don't expire, we can start over.
Yep.
It's kind of hard to explain that sometimes our counselors that this 2004, 2005, this 2007 preliminary approval, which they may not like the end plat and the product, it's a little tough to explain. But it is, if you want to extend the life of that through a resolution, it takes board action.
Yeah, I just know there's a lot of stuff coming, and it's going to be a big issue.
Can I say something about post-decision reviews?
Yes.
Yeah.
The post-decision reviews that used to be were minor tweaks to this, and we forgot to add a phase to that. Maybe we're doing a little rerouting here, but the post-decision reviews we've seen are like wholesale changes. They're like reviewing new projects. And it bears out in some of the revenue that we're not seeing to cover the cost of that magnitude of post-decision review. So just a heads up, on the 16th of March, I have a work session with the board
talk about our cost of service and fee study that we, I don't know, we're wrapping up. I know some of you had stakeholder meetings with Paul Lewis. And Susan just mentioned to me, yeah, it might have been this morning. I can't believe it's already almost the end of the week, but we were talking about these post-decision reviews are becoming more complex. And it stands to reason. I mean, a lot of projects were shelved, and now they've got a second or third or fourth life. And the new owner wants to do something quite different. So rather than starting from square one, you start from a middle square to move on.
Yeah.
We need to be looking at how much time you spend on on post-decision reviews.
Yep, and cost and typing.
Because we're going to see some fee adjustments.
Keeping in mind, though, that the post-decision reviews are not covered under the fee on.
No, on residential stuff. Well, and on commercial?
On anything.
Really?
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah, not covered. Everything else, final engineering review and everything. Post-decision review process is not.
Where do we stand at with, I know previously post-decision reviews could run concurrently with engineering, and that went away. Where does that stand now?
That's number four on my list.
Okay. Since you brought it up, Mark.
I don't know if I follow the question.
Post-decision reviews, we were able to run concurrently with engineering in the past, and then county went away from that, and now you have to do it. You have to do your post-decision review, then you can go through engineering, and just the time that it adds on.
That's it.
And then trying to hit those development windows, which are not the longest in this region, makes it really tough on projects. Understanding the wholesale changes, and maybe there's a different consideration for different types of post-decision reviews, and allowing for running concurrently or not. And I would assume also that's going to tie in with the fee charges will be according to the type of post-decision review.
So the preference would be to do a post-decision review, the site plan and final engineering concurrent.
Correct.
Correct.
I'd have to.
That's how it works.
I'd have to do some research on when that changed, why that changed. And,
I did get an email back, a very specific one from Ali about that, because I asked the question, and he said that it was never allowed by code. However, they did it as a courtesy.
Okay.
And the reason they're not doing it now is because they don't have the staffing to do it. That's the response I got back, and I saved that email. That's what I've heard.
But definitely, if we want to get it on the agenda, start to look at it, you know, we'll do that. So.
And I think there's different situations too. There's some that are pretty very minor post
reviews,
and there's other ones like Marty's talking about.
And that's a big part of the mix. You know, if we got wholesale changes, then concurrent doesn't look very good at that. So.
And you know, it's hard to determine until we see something on, you know, what is the nature of the post decision review. I mean, we can take a guess from kind of, you know, telephone calls and email correspondence, but until we see something, it's like, well, is this, we might have to do like a, we have typing, but that's just process, right, notice. But we might have to look at, you know, minor and major post-decision reviews and do some kind of, you know, because there's a different time allocation. And, I mean, this is all kind of coming to a conclusion between now and about the first part of May for any kind of fee adjustments.
I think it ties in with the concurrent review in general.
Yeah.
So you allow it right now in commercial and industrial, but not on residential. Now the city of Vancouver has been allowing it on residential for years now, and it's actually worked really well. So the reason why it's working in the city, why reinvent the wheel? Some of the processes they have there, maybe the county can look at what they're doing. And I have to say, I think what it's doing is it's eliminating a whole process where instead of doing a preliminary stormwater, preliminary design, they're reviewing the final right up front. And there are, they have to put more holds on it. And that's the trade-off. And there's a little more risk. And sometimes things get put on hold for longer because sometimes your application is held up because of an engineering issue where it wouldn't have before, but it kept going. So there's a little bit of that understanding back and forth, but it is working.
I am somewhat, I won't say sensitive, I have kind of thoughts about when we go through our comparisons, right? And you in Vancouver, well, is their engineering part of their whole engineering and utilities program, or is it development engineering?
You know what I mean? We don't have utilities like Vancouver. We don't have a sewer and water. We don't have. I mean, so we're looking at specifically storm and transportation, and that's not a sunk business as part of a big utility like sewer and water. So, like, I'm looking at other agencies that we compare to, like, why their fees so much lower in, for example, Pierce County. Well, does Pierce County have utilities, true utilities like Vancouver, where those are sunk costs that a lot of that stuff can get buried, you know? They don't have the overhead to carry because it's part of the big utility, you know, sewer water utility. So it's not an equal comparison when you're looking at something like that. But, you know, you all are experiencing it. We are. Bandwidth and having a, you know, you can do so much with efficiency, then you have to add people. And yeah. I have a budget request in for next week on adding more staff.
And the reality is, if it's anything like what we have, you can't just hire someone and expect them to start producing.
No.
You might be 6 months, a year, sometimes more.
You hope to
really, like,
you hope to steal from others. That's what they do in the Seattle area. You know, so it's tough.
Yeah, I guess in regards to the time and running concurrent with post-decision review, I understand what you're saying, and maybe there's different classifications of post-decision review that one can allow for and one doesn't, because if it is a major type of change, then it doesn't make sense. But for ones that are minor and the time is money for projects, I mean, I, you know, be happy on a project to pay a higher fee if I could run that concurrently, because the reality is the cost savings to that from that time is huge.
So maybe that if you have a post-decision review that has minimal engineering changes but a little bit more on the site plan, that could be done, you know, we could consider that running concurrently, but if it's like a lot of changes to the site and a lot of changes to engineering,
understandable, yeah.
You know, there's only so much that we have the bandwidth to that kind of push.
So staffing levels is obviously a target for discussion as well, and I think we talked about that for the last 2 years, and now you guys are seeing it. And one question I have, and this, not to put you on the spot, but the whole fee waiver program, with the cost of service analysis, is that how's that going to all get?
It's coming.
I mean, we need to figure that out.
The,
yeah.
No, this is all public knowledge. I believe the board is looking at a fee waiver. They'll be looking at the fee waiver program. I believe there may be a work session scheduled coming up in April. I mean, right now they've got work sessions next week on budget. A week after that on my cost of service and fee. I'm not sure what the 23rd and 30th hold, but I think they're looking at something in April for, I think. So, you know, it is something that's going to be coming up. We've waived in land use review. I looked at the numbers earlier. Between 14 and 15, we waived $500,000. And I have the finance director of the county saying to the council, assign $770,000 to the general fund to make land use whole. So we'd have been collecting fees, it would be not 770, it would be 270, but there's also a public share that we also get for land use review, about 16%. So that'd be 575. So we, you know, we'd be out around maybe a couple hundred thousand. Mm-hmm. We've run a lot, but the subsidy used to be quite a bit more.
And kind of tying that back to affordable housing, if that, the change there is definitely in the way, if the fees are all going to residential, you know, there's an equation here. It's just, that's part of a larger discussion.
There are so many dynamics at play right now between now and June, because I'm also looking at phase one of our system implementation, which really hits on single family residential subdivisions. And then phase two is the rest of the building in the fall. I've got three or four major things that need to mesh.
Okay. Yeah.
so.
Stay tuned.
Okay. Anybody can do it.
Well, I've had a team of good people working with me on this.
So really, that's really what it should. I've identified, and what everybody else's concerns are, what they want to take up at SEPA, the stormwater for single family residential, the streamlining of the engineering reviews, as you mentioned, with the post-decision reviews, regardless of whether it's provided for in code or not. Because the provision for allowing concurrent engineering review for site plan reviews isn't in code. It's just pilot programs. And then the grade permit items. That should certainly keep us busy throughout the year, in addition to everything else that's going to come up, the other spring biannuals, or the fall biannuals, and everything else. Good.
My only thing is touching on affordable housing, and Marty, I think, was down the road, was any discussion about looking at what, I believe it wasn't in the bill code at some point, and looking at that at some point down the road. That's my only.
So when you have your
30th, March 30th.
Okay, so you might want to mention something to the board at that point in time.
Okay.
Any kind of major policy initiatives that are in that realm, I can see them looking at after June 30th.
Yeah.
But put it on their radar screen. We had a guy come in yesterday at board time and talk about tiny house.
Yeah.
Properties.
Yeah.
Or initiatives. So
I think there's a bucket list. Infill's one of them, accessory dwelling units. That all is part of that next.
It's the same bucket.
Everything that goes with that. I mean, I think it's.
And then who knows what they would like us to look at.
Let's move on.
Well, I think a couple of us are. I'll be brief.
Radioactive.
I think experiencing a little bit of time lag, environmental services department on responsiveness and issues that. Isn't running concurrently with planning and public works. And it's been a bit of a struggle, I'll say. So I think the board needs to hear that in some shape or fashion, even though they may be addressing it.
I'm imagining everyone in this room has probably run into work at all with them in recent history.
Have you seen that Jamie is
only you and Jamie?
Yeah. What's
that? I see you too. I'm sorry. Jeff, this is you too.
No, what's this going to say? Do you see that as a
nice
staffing level issue or code issue? What is the.
I don't know what the issue is down there. I think it's a staff issue, and I think it's a leadership issue. I think it's they're broken. I mean, they're out of control, in my opinion, and I will put my name on that one. I don't know whether this board is proper to bring that up or not, but I know Olson Engineering, well, girls, all Olson's tried. I know people are trying to independently put meetings together and all kinds of things, but I know this board has a way to be able to let commissioners know.
And I'm just, maybe I'm trying to drive it back to be constructive about it, but I think, a couple of years ago we were focused on doing stuff smarter, faster, cheaper, just from a process standpoint. If we've got a squeaky wheel, let's try to fix it, make sure that processes are working smoothly, concurrently, so we can get stuff out.
Yeah, I can say a specific project where something that should have been called out and noted in through final engineering wasn't until literally when final engineering was supposed to be signed off, and now I'm pushed back 9 months later now because of it. And it could have been addressed. We experienced this. And it just, I mean, it...
I'm just experiencing it.
So you're in good company. You're in good company. And why and how come that's okay is I don't...
It's not.
I struggle with it. It's not. It's fine that, I mean, obviously, if you need to be called out, you can be called out, but you don't. There's multiple reviews and it's never cited until literally it's time to sign and then you decide to work on it.
The problem is, you know, someone like Marty and all these great things we're talking about, we can do all these wonderful things, but it takes one department like that and throws you completely off the track. Everything you've done is negated because, you know, we lose.
Yeah.
We're getting set back off the tracks anyway.
And I know that, I mean, this, our challenge a lot of times is actually on the front end of things, in a fully complete process, but I mean, we don't generally on the back end, don't have an issue, but I mean, it's
a lot of back and forth. It should not be a non-issue.
Coming common.
The back end should go real smooth.
And literally, it was when they were going to sign and it got called on. That was.
I'd say that's probably enough. The other thing, and we talked to Marty about it, and Marty, you're talking to Chuck, I think, because he's talking about it, is the permit center times, or I don't know if you've experienced.
Wait times?
Building permit, things like that. No, Marty, I know it's a staffing deal, but we just got one that was 4 weeks now. I heard from NewTrad their longest was 3 weeks and a day.
So we have, I have this conversation a couple of times a week with Chuck and to an extent Jim, and we're gonna be doing some things and announcing some expectations to make improvements. I think we're looking at something like March 14th, so that's just a week from Monday. I will put some of this back on the folks who are applying. If you make an appointment, keep your appointment. Don't cancel. That screws things up. And we have builders who on and off keep their appointments and don't. So don't do that. Make an appointment, you keep it.
I think appointment.
Secondly,
it'd be crazy to lose an appointment because I think the appointments are a week out.
Secondly,
so I'm hoping it's not one of my companies.
Secondly, whoever is my boss at the time, whenever I say they can fire me, but you ask us to make improvements, we do. One of the things we say is make sure that your application is complete and accurate. Simple. It's an open book test. We have a checklist. And here are the things that you need to submit. And I think it's a little bit comical to a degree. We're anal about a stacking order. We want to see it in this. Document one is one. Document two is two. Document three is three. Document three is not two. We have it in order. So get this to us in order, complete and accurate. When that starts slipping, then we have, this isn't complete, this isn't accurate, you're gonna have to schedule another appointment out. So we hope to really reward people who are submitting quality applications.
Sure.
And we can then say, okay, your appointment is X, or we'll take it in, and within 3 to 5 days, you'll get your permit. But we can't keep going back to garbage in, garbage out.
We've experienced some minor changes, though, but you have to make reappointments.
Yeah, and
real minor changes, and that's really frustrating. Than your,
and we're trying to get some of the things that are minor.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's like we'll accept a 1 millimeter tolerance, but I don't want the 1 millimeter turned into 1 meter, because that's what happens. I mean, you guys get busy, we get busy, right? Haste is not a good thing at times. I want to get my application in, and maybe there's not
an extra 10 minutes spent on looking at something. I mean, this happens. It happens to me when you get super busy and you've got 14 different things to do before the end of the day. So we're hoping to get some improvements in terms of reinforcing, you make an appointment, you keep your appointment. If after a couple, two or three times, we're not going to make any appointments with you anymore. We have permits that came in through lien applications. They made their appointment. They were approved. They're still sitting for being picked up. So it's like, hurry up, and then wait. You know, that's just, I mean, that kind of screws things up.
I just don't understand. I can't fathom that one.
There are some people who do that. I won't name builder. I mean, I don't know who the builders are. They're the big national builders, they're local builders, they're smaller builders, they're production builders. I don't know.
Why don't you know?
I mean, I have this conversation a couple times a week, literally.
Yeah.
We do need to hire more staff. We have a couple plans reviewers in a supplemental budget. We have a few inspectors in a supplemental budget. We have we have this classification of employee called a permit technician assistant, who would be like somebody who would help people in the lobby as they're waiting. Like, what are you applying for? Okay, you're applying for this. Let's make sure you have all the paperwork that you need. So almost kind of concierge level service. So these are things that we're hoping to get approved in a supplemental. But as it's been said, you know, we'll recruit and hire these people. Are they gonna be fully trained and ready to go June 1st? No. Unless you're able to steal some of these people from other agencies. So we have a meeting with BIA on the 30th,
yeah.
And I know we're gonna talk about lien processing, you know, lien applications, and how can we make real good progress there. Let me know whenever, you know, I know it's out there. I know we're out there 3 or 4 weeks. It sucks.
I know you know, and I said that when I first brought it up. Just to bring it up so that people here knew that we still have an issue there, but Marty has been working on it. I know you know it. We've talked about it privately too. So
there's not a week that goes by that I don't talk about this 3 or 4 times a week.
There's been a lot of throwing under the bus today, but that was not meant to be one.
No, that's fine.
There's been a few of us that have run over, including you.
I threw Hornstein under the bus yesterday.
That was awesome, by the way.
Hornstein's a good one to throw under the bus.
So anyway, I just, you know, you guys, you know how to get a hold of me, know where I live, know where I work.
No, Chuck does a great job. Chuck does a great job responding when there's a... He does a great job.
All right.
Thank you.
I think we've more to come. We're done for today on that topic. So thank you, Marty. Public comment. Give a chance for that. Yes, please.
A little good news, Dan. Thank you for today.
Sure.
One, off the presses from Ecology, the cost of change. The WIM is now updated to include Clark County calibration and default parameters. As of late this morning, so.
So you download it?
Download it.
Is that good news?
It is. What they don't know is that nothing else works in the program anymore. you can't actually get it past anymore.
Maybe
you
got to
start thinking about it. Are you talking about WWE?
One,
the new one. Oh, the new one. I have Bernie Rowling.
It's bad.
What's that?
The new one.
WWE.
With that LED stuff in it. It's random. There's some problems.
Eric, what is it? It's on the DOE.
The DOE website.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have enough for?
I have plenty. I've got probably more than we have time for. But yeah, I think so. Andrew and I are getting queued up. You guys, please, if you're available.
And with that, Don, just very quickly. So when you're ready, you and Andrew, on the reports, I should get that to Mark McCauley and the board and their staff over there. So I wasn't sure kind of what the time frame is
we could
target to try to get that. They'd like to be able to read it and preview it before the meeting. So.
And are you thinking it's going to be different than what we have here, or is that?
If what we've got is good for you, then I just have Rosie pull the draft watermark off and go with it. So.
I think we made some edits. I finally had the whole months ago. So you might want to send that out to everyone to look around. I'll compare it against what I have in my notes. And then, I mean, if we do that over, like, first of next week, then we can go ahead and all buy off on it. And
okay, I'll send it out.
That would be great.
Could you send me the electronic? I mean, I think I've got it, but if you could send me the latest version of this.
And don't even bother trying to make edits on it. That's the most screwed up document I've ever experienced.
Not track changes, you mean?
Yeah, it's got weird
formatting.
So, do you need that still there?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to need to send it out electronically.
Yeah.
But we'll send it back for editing.
We can do the track changes on it, but then send it back to Rosie for her.
You still need it, Greg. Right?
So okay.
I think I've got it, but I just want to make sure I've got the latest version.
Okay.
And then I'll send it out. And all from the notes I've got here, I'm probably will be adding some stuff.
And as long as we've got Marty, just real quick, I want to confirm. So we've got you penciled next month for still the fee adjustments and updates. Are we still good on that? April 14th. Yes.
Yeah, we're
good there. And then the Tidemark replacement, the phase one rollout. Is that good for next month?
I believe so.
We'll stay with that.
Fees for sure. Tidemark, I'll double check, but I think that should be good.
Can we bring our stuff in on the SEPA for that meeting too? At least get that rolling.
Yes.
That seems like a pretty light meeting.
We've got those two agenda. Well, yeah, we should be able to fit that in. So, and that meeting date, it does bump a week. So we're on the second Thursday because of the spring break. We bump that. So it's Thursday, April the 14th.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll bring what I have on the secret stuff. So why don't you go ahead and put that on.
Okay. We're adjourned.
We don't.